Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to Matthew chapter 27, Mark chapter 15, the end of Luke 22, and the end of John 18. We're talking about events that occurred on the day of Jesus' atonement for our sin. Last session, we saw that he was condemned by the high priest and the Sanhedrin during their preliminary hearings at the residence of the high priest on the western hill of the city of Jerusalem. But they cannot turn him over to the Romans until they've done the official trial. And so that is what we see described next. Matthew 27:1 says, "When morning came," so once the sun is up, then they'll be able to condemn him officially. Sun comes up at this time of year. We're talking about the very beginning of April, sometime near what should be about 6:20, 6:30, something in that neighborhood. So the trial was probably, the preliminary hearing part was finished probably as it started getting light outside, probably about an hour earlier. And then they walked him down through the streets until they arrived at the council chamber, which we don't know exactly where it was located, but the testimony that we have of people regarding the temple, such as Josephus, seemed to indicate that the temple, that the chamber was located in the northern and western part of the temple complex, not very far from the Tower of Antonia, which was the praetorium that we'll be talking about later. It was located on the northwest quadrant of the Temple Mount. So when morning came, all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. Mark 15:1, as soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and the scribes and the whole council. Luke chapter 22, verse 66, gives even more details. When the day came, the assembly of the elders and the people gathered together, both chief priests and scribes, and they led him away to their council. So here we are talking about, as soon as it was light enough, the whole Sanhedrin that had been at the residence of Caiaphas takes the condemned Jesus across town to the official chamber. And once the sun comes up, once it's officially dawn, they then had their official trial. It's not going to take very long. Verse 67, they said, "If you are the Christ, tell us." So this is the way that they condemned him in the preliminary hearing. Remember, they couldn't get the witnesses to agree to condemn him. When the high priest just generically asked him to respond to the testimony offered by the witnesses, Jesus didn't say anything. So finally, Caiaphas said, "I adjure you, I order you by the name, I adjure you by God himself, bear testimony. Are you or are you not the Christ?" And Jesus' response was, "I am, and I tell you that you will eventually see me coming as the Son of Man on the clouds," in fulfillment of Daniel chapter number 7. And that's when they said, "Blasphemy! He's condemned himself." And then they began feeling free to abuse him, because as far as they were concerned, he was now guilty of self-incrimination. So now the council needs to repeat that. They want him to repeat those same words again. But interestingly enough, Jesus kind of drags it out a little bit. So verse 67 again, If you're the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask you, you will not answer. So Jesus provides this testimony. You're not going to believe my response because you've already made your mind up that I'm not. But if I were to try to engage you to challenge this prejudice of yours, you're not going to respond to my queries. So, verse 69. But from now on, the Son of Man shall be seated at the right hand of the power of God. So that's the prediction of his ascension. He's going to go back to where he came from, back into the eternal presence of the Father. Verse 70. So they all said, are you the Son of God then? So they need him to verbalize the same thing he did in the preliminary hearing. So that's what they're driving at here. And so he said to them, you say that I am. That's our English Standard Version treatment of the wording here. I'd like to share with you what it literally says. It says, you say that I am. And so that's what we see here in the text, but it's possible that it could be translated something like this. It is as you say, I am. And so I think that's actually the way we should understand this, is that Jesus finally affirms to them, you are correct in your assertion. And then he says the words that bring great anger from them, the words that echo Exodus chapter 3, where Moses had said, I'm going to go and talk to the people about you telling me to go there and get them out of slavery. They know a lot of different gods. Which God should I tell them is sending me? And God's response was, I am whom I am. Tell them I am sent you. And so this becomes a flash phrase for the Jewish people. When they hear it claimed by someone, they think that that person is claiming to be God. Well, Jesus is actually claiming to be God. That's because it's true. So Jesus says the words, I am. And then verse 71, then they said, what further testimony do we need? We have heard it ourselves from his own lips. And so this is when they can officially condemn him. It's probably close to 6:30 in the morning. On the 14th day of the first Jewish month, the sun has just barely come up, and they have now done what is required by their law. They've crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's. They've made everything official. But they have one additional step that they have to take. And that is, in order for them to have him executed, they have to go through the Roman court next. Because Roman law regarding the Jewish nation was that only a Roman prefect with capital authority can declare the death of a Jewish person. Only the Romans can execute, with this exception. The Romans had already agreed that the perimeter around the Holy Temple shrine area could have signs put up that any Gentile found beyond this point, it will be guilty or responsible for their own death. So the Jewish people had been given authority to execute instantly, on the spot, anyone that violated that sacred precinct of the Temple Mount. Jesus has not done any of that. So they cannot claim that they could kill him, stone him, for that offense. Instead, they have to get this rubber stamped. They actually have to turn him over to the Roman authorities and have him killed. In fact, that's what we see next in all the passages. It says, this is Luke 23:1, then the whole company of them arose and brought him before Pilate. Because it is only Pilate that can have him executed. Now, John tells us something special at this point. John chapter 18, verse number 28, it starts, first of all, at the residence of Caiaphas. It skips the stop at the assembly hall, the council hall, because that was only a matter of minutes, maybe 5 minutes at the most. It says, then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters, the praetorium. And this is the Tower of Antonia, which was like a palace itself. And it sits on the northwest quadrant of the Temple Mount. And it was where the security forces of the Roman government were stationed to keep the peace in the city of Jerusalem. This complex of the Antonia Tower actually had four tall towers at the four corners of it, and the southeast tower was near the center of the north wall of the temple complex, and it was as I think twice the height of the other towers of the Antonia. And it was basically the same height as the top of the temple building tower. And so they were able to put spotters up in these towers, particularly this southeast tower of the four. And they could keep an eye on everything going on down in the temple complex to make sure that they could have rapid response forces jump in there if there was any trouble coming. We also believe that the Tower of Antonia had a couple of communicating bridges between the portico, the northern portico of the Temple Mount, and the Tower of Antonia, which allowed the security forces of Rome to come across and go around the entire upper tier of the surrounding tower, or the surrounding area of the Temple Mount, so that they could have patrols that could keep track everywhere, and again, have rapid response forces that could put down any trouble before it got too far gone. We have a really good representation of these rapid response forces from Antonia Tower in the book of Acts, whenever Paul was being beaten by the crowd in the court of the Gentiles. And suddenly a whole bunch of Romans come down into the region and surround him and arrest him. And they take him back upstairs in the temple complex. And then presumably they were going to take him across one of these bridges into the Tower of Antonia. And so they are going to take Jesus to the Tower of Antonia, but not they themselves go in because of this. Again, John 18, 28. So they came to the governor's headquarters, that is the Tower of Antonia. It was early morning. It's just barely daylight. So maybe 6:30 or so. And they themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters, so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. Remember that for Jewish religionists, like the Pharisees, and they're part of this group, to go into a place that belonged to Gentiles, which the Tower of Antonia does, just crossing the threshold made you ceremonially unclean. And it would take you overnight to go through the cleansing ceremonies. And that's problematic because it is the morning of the 14th day of the first Jewish month the day on which the Passover lambs are butchered. And so these guys need to go through that ceremony of butchering their Passover lamb later today so that they could eat the Passover after sunset tonight on the 15th. And so they don't dare contaminate themselves ceremonially by going into the Gentile territory of the Praetorian Tower. So Pilate went outside to them. There are plenty of examples of accommodation that the Jewish people gained from the Romans during this time period. Not the least of which was there are never allowed in Jerusalem any type of images that the Romans would habitually have. In fact, Pilate got in trouble during his first few weeks as prefect, Roman prefect at Judea, because he didn't feel that he wanted to agree to that sort of accommodation. So he ordered his troops to go ahead and take all of their military standards with them that would have had, well, the eagle would have been one of them, but also images of Tiberius Caesar, images of animals, images of their gods. These would be on all their little banners. And so he told them, go ahead and take those up to Jerusalem. And when they woke up in the morning, when the Jewish people woke up in the morning and they saw some of these images at the Antonia Tower, they had a fit. And a whole bunch of them went down and protested at Caesarea on the coast in front of the residence of Pilate down there. And they did it for almost a week until finally he told them they needed to cease and desist and disperse. Otherwise, he was going to take action against them, beat them, possibly even kill some of them. And they said, it'd be better for us to die than for us to put up with these images. And so he blinked at that point, and he gave up, and he recalled the images. And so Pilate has been living up to this accommodation standard for a long time, understanding the Jewish people, particularly the religious ones, have very strict scruples. And Romans have to bend over backwards sometimes to accommodate that. And that included Pilate having to come outside the Praetorian walls in order to meet with the Sanhedrin members on this day. So, verse 29, so Pilate went outside to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? We can only guess at some of the attitudes here. My guess is that Pilate was also already irritated with these guys coming to him early in the morning. They didn't get him out of bed. He would have already been up to take care of things. That's just the Roman way. But probably irritated that they're coming to him early on this morning, expecting him to rubber stamp something for them, and that they made him come outside in this accommodation of their religious scruples. So it seems almost as if he plans on giving them a hard time back and not cooperating. It was probably very common practice to rubber stamp an awful lot of these execution requests from the Jewish Sanhedrin. He's apparently not going to play that way today. So, what accusation do you bring against this man? And they answered him, if this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you. So effectively saying, if he wasn't a bad guy, we wouldn't be here. And so Pilate said to them, well, then take him yourself and judge him by your own law. And the Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death. And this, John says, was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken, to show by what kind of death he was going to die. Because the Jewish traditional way of executing a criminal is by stoning. But now that the Romans are controlling execution, It will be by crucifixion for anyone that is a non-citizen. Jesus is a non-citizen. And by having their heads chopped off if they happen to be both Jewish and a Roman citizen. An example of that would be the Apostle James. He seems to have been a Roman citizen. And so they have effectively said, look, you're going to have to take him off our hands and execute him for us because we can't do it. We're not allowed to stone him. And so Pilate has to listen as they accuse him. Now, what are they accusing him of? This is where we have to go somewhere else. Luke 23:2. So they begin to accuse him, saying, we found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. So the accusation they make is twofold. Number one, he's here causing trouble for our Jewishness. He is a false Jewish leader. But of more importance to you, a Roman, he's been telling us that we shouldn't pay tribute to Caesar, and he's been claiming that he's a king, that he's the king of the Jews. Now, has he actually said those two things? Well, no. Actually, when they challenged him about the paying of tribute to Caesar, he told them, well, you pay to Caesar the image that's due to Caesar, his coinage. But you give to God the image that belongs to him. That'd be you. So he's not telling them not to pay taxes. That's a flat-out lie. But they probably thought it would motivate Pilate. The other thing is he's claiming to be Mashiach. He's claiming to be the Christos. He's claiming to be the Messiah, the Christ, which would be the king of the Jews in prophecy. Well, the kings of the Jews are designated by the Romans during this period of history. So for someone to put off this idea that they were the king of the Jews without having Roman stamp of approval on that would be treason. And so that would be a good charge for the Romans to execute him on. So has Jesus claimed to be Messiah? Yes. Is he claiming to be the king, like a king of the Jews like Herod had been? No. And so that is where Pilate interviews him. John chapter 18, verse 33. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? So are you making the claim that you are the king of the Jewish people, even though we Romans did not appoint you? Verse 34, Jesus answered, do you say this on your own accord, or did others say it to you about me? So are you coming to this conclusion because you've heard evidence from your people, or are you getting this from somewhere else? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests had delivered you over to me. What have you done? So Pilate's like, I don't even want to get involved in this whole thing. It's your own Jewish leadership that's saying that you need to be executed. So verse 36, Jesus responds, my kingdom is not of this world. Now, you must pay attention to the chronological context here. The Jewish people had gotten into the habit of thinking that when the Messiah came, everything was over, that he was going to declare himself to be the king, and then the resurrection of the saints was going to happen, the transformation of the living ones was going to happen, the old heaven and old earth were going to pass away. New heaven and new earth were going to come into existence. The curse was going to be done away with. Everything that we think of in relationship to the second coming of Jesus, they believed was going to happen when the Messiah declared himself in their time period. But that's not the way it's going to play out. Jesus came the first time to be the Savior, to be the atoning sacrifice for sin, to lay his life down, to be the last Passover lamb, the ultimate Passover lamb. He did not come this first time to be the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's the next time around. So Jesus is trying to express that to Pilate here. My kingdom is not of this world, of this era. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. My kingdom is not from this world. Come back next time and we'll pick up right there.